Are you a scaling SaaS founder?
Ready to make the leap from leading a team to leading an organization? Join us each week as we refill your think tank with actionable tips and strategies from great business minds you know and those you don't know yet. This is SaaS Fuel with your host, five-time entrepreneur, SaaS founder, and globetrotting adventurer, Jeff Mains.
Welcome back to the SaaS Fuel podcast, where we dish out value to our clients like a Michelin star chef. Every course, a masterpiece. Every touch point, a culinary delight. I'm your host, Jeff Mains. I help B2B SaaS founders like you grow from traction to scale. Here, growth is more than just numbers. It's about crafting a future-proof company, premium valuation, and leaders who build a business of significance while living epic, adventurous lives. We've all been on the receiving end of a sales pitch that feels like nonstop spam. Can you relate to that? I mean, anyone's car warranty been about to expire? Or, you know, do you need a ridiculous number of booked appointments? Guaranteed. Yeah, I probably get 10 poorly targeted offers a day, maybe more. It's painful. Same with phone calls. But what if that overly eager salesperson focused less on selling and more on serving at every step? Yeah, there actually are steps to a sales process. Everything can't be a one-call close. But a couple of weeks ago, I actually got a call from a rep who did it right. She leveraged the power of relevant value and solved my problem before even mentioning her product. And that was very impressive and honestly completely unexpected. Very quickly, she earned my trust and ultimately my business. So much so that I tried to hire her away. And it was a no for now, but the door is open, so we'll see. In the meantime, here are three ways to be relevant and add value with future clients. The first is to listen intently and uncover needs. And resist the urge to pitch right away, show up and throw up. You know, instead, ask thoughtful questions to understand pain points. Dig into the prospect's world. Sales genius Keith Eads, he's author of New Solution Selling, says questions are the answer. I think that is a brilliant, brilliant statement. Uncovering someone's true challenges shows that you actually care. The important thing here is to really listen. And that doesn't mean just pass the time and pretend to listen until you can pitch or wait for a pause so you can tell them all about how your product is such a great fit and can help with everything that they talked about. No, actually listen like a human having a conversation. And number two is tailor your messages and solutions. A one-size-fits-all approach won't resonate. It just doesn't. Personalize everything you deliver based on what you've learned back there by listening in step one. Listen, and then we want to personalize based on what we heard. Send an article that speaks to their unique situation. Introduce an idea that addresses their specific goals. Tailoring shows that you actually were listening. You care about them, not just the sale, and it makes you relevant. This builds trust and credibility. And the cool thing is that 97.6% of your competitors, they won't do it. So you will really stand out when you do. And then number three is help first, sell second. Provide value with no strings attached. Zero. Absolutely zero. Don't expect anything in return. Share ideas that make their job easier. Offer guidance based on your experience. No product pitch needed. They'll remember how you generously helped and see you as a partner, not as a salesperson. Again, most won't do this. You remember Zig Ziglar? He said, you can have everything you want in life if you will just help other people get what they want. It's true then, and it's true today. Maybe even more true today. The sales environment today is way different than it was 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago. Way different than 20 years ago. So give first. Following up with relevant value is the best path to turn prospects into clients and clients into raving fans. They'll know that you have their back at every single step, not just when you want the sale. Have you done this? How did it work? What other sales advice do you have? Drop it in the comments below. I'd love to hear. If you want lots of value fast, check out my book, Small Fish, Big Pond, Building a World-Class Business That Swims Circles Around Competitors. Small Fish Big Pond delivers powerful marketing and leadership lessons guaranteed to enhance your marketing message, wrap value around your clients, and guide their buying journey to conclude that your company is the only solution for them. It includes step-by-step frameworks and time-tested growth principles to attract ideal clients, convert them, and then transform them into your brand ambassadors. Pick up the print, ebook, or audio today at smallfishbigpond.com, Amazon, or your favorite book source. And remember, all book profits go to charity, always. Our founder on Tuesday was Roland Seeblink, three-time founder and builder of three unicorns. We talked about leading organizations, keys to scaling without growing to death, and how to get your SaaS on the fast track. Our expert guest last week was Ryan Staley, founder and CEO of Whale Boss. We talked about sales, marketing, AI, and exactly what works today and why, plus a few places where you don't want to use AI. Great insights on how to turn every sales rep into a one-person army. If you missed either episode, go back and give them a listen. It's great stuff. My guest today is Justin Chi, founder of Cold Email Hackers. Justin and his team excel at crafting B2B lead generation strategies for early stage companies and solve the common struggle with product message fit and bridge the gap to message market fit. They're more productive than SDR at way less. Welcome someone who spins emails into gold, Justin Chi.
Hey, Justin, welcome to SaaS Fuel.
Hey, glad to be on.
Well, tell me a little bit about your background. How did you come up with the idea for Cold Email Hackers?
Yeah, so I'll give you a quick brief. It's kind of a long story. So I was working at ZoomInfo for a while, number one SDR there, about 120 meetings a month. And most of that was through cold email. This was 2021, 2022-ish when everything was much easier in the cold email world. But I got my first three clients as a side gig. Basically, I was sending emails to these people, you know, a lot of VP sales, VP marketing, whatever. And they were just asking me to write the emails for them, do their email deliverability, that kind of stuff. We're just booking meetings for them. And the first 6 months we ran this, I didn't really intend this to be a full-time business. But it kind of turned into it because we didn't get any results for that first 6 months, right? And part of the reason for that, we kind of figured this out over the 6 months, was we were landing in spam. So I had to do a lot of testing, kind of test different things to get out of spam. And we were sending messages that were just a bit too, I guess, broad, right? Like we would go after, let's say, for example, we're selling like a lead gen software. I'm going after VP of sales. VP of sales is pretty broad. There's a lot of sub-industries, that kind of stuff. So we kind of had to figure out, how do we segment lists? How do we segment our prospecting, that kind of stuff? And how do we just make sure that, you know, the message is landing in the inbox and that it doesn't seem like it's a canned, I guess, email that we're sending to these people. So that just kind of led to me going full-time on this. And yeah, I've been doing this for SaaS founders ever since.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So B2B lead generation, does email still work? Is that still, obviously cold email hackers, is that something that you think still works?
It's gotten harder. And I would say even for us, like we have to really stay ahead of the curve. For our clients, like there's always some kind of wrench being thrown in our machine, right? Like setting up inboxes, you know, going to spam, things burning. It's just a lot more technical than it used to be. So you got to be more technical. If you can't be technical, I think it's better to cold call, LinkedIn, whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. And not landing in spam. I mean, that's a big one.
Yeah.
What are the things that you do? How do you think about, you know, not getting in spam? I mean, obvious things, but then maybe some non-obvious.
Yeah, I would say obvious things. This is, you can find documentation on this online, but you have to make sure the domains you're sending from. So I would, I guess, preface this is don't send cold emails from your primary domain. Main reason is you already have so many users on a given network. And when you're sending cold emails from primary domain, you're putting all the other business operations at risk, right? Like if I burn my whole domain by blasting a ton of cold emails, invoices can't get sent out, people aren't receiving invoices, et cetera. So it's just like risky in that sense, right? As far as how we think about technical setup of cold email domains, it's a pretty simple system. So we use tools like SmartLead, Instantly. I think there's a bunch of these tools out there, but the most important part is these tools support multiple domains. So think like 50, 100 domains. And these are all like burner domains, right? So think like try SaaSview or go SaaSview or something. And then we'll set up about two inboxes each. Maybe like with your Jeff and then Jeff.mains at try SaaSview. And what we're trying to do here is basically mitigate the risk of sending, right? Because normal people don't really send 500 emails per inbox per day, right? Like that's not something normal people do. And that kind of segues to my next point, which I'll get to. But normal people don't send that many emails. So it's like, we want to split up the risk, right? Like for a given, for my own personal setup and my clients, we do about 50 domains. We'll buy 50 domains. We'll set it up, you know, DKIM, DNS, whatever, like all the backend records, that kind of stuff. We'll warm it up for 2 weeks. Like most of these tools have a built-in warm tool, and you should warm up for at least 2 weeks. But we're warming up, you know, kind of getting Google to see that we're a real account, or at least get them to think we're a real account. And yeah. From there, we're trying to keep the, this will go to my second point, but we're trying to keep the sending behavior as human as possible, right? So we're sending about 15, 20 emails per inbox per day. That translates to 30, 40, 50 emails per domain total per day, right? And okay. We're sending warm-up emails as well. So when we send the warm-up emails, that increases our reply rate because normal people don't just get a 3% reply rate. So we're trying to boost the reply rate by doing 20 or, you know, about 20 or so cold emails, 10 to 15 warm emails along with the actual sending inboxes. And that just kind of makes us look more human. And then that goes to our second point, which is, actually, let me go back a little. So, of course, like, you have to verify the leads before you send them, right? Like, use Never Bounce. But the second part, I think people don't really talk about, like, technically. This is not really technical, but it's more like messaging, right? Like, normal people don't send really long emails pitching a service, right? Like, we want to make it seem informal. We don't want people reporting as spam. So, basically, when you think about deliverability beyond technicals, just think about it as, does this sound like something a human would send? Does it sound like something a normal person would send? If not, like, how do I get there? Because there's technical, there is the messaging, you know, there's certain things that get picked up by spam filters, but people also report you to spam, even if you, you know, if you don't sound human. So that's the biggest thing. That's kind of long-winded, but that's kind of how I see deliverability from my perspective. So,
and what do you think about spam links or complaint links within the email that go to you versus go to the providers, those kinds of things?
Yeah, I have a little trick I like to use. So instead of having the unsubscribe link, we just say reply unsubscribe if you want me to remove you from the list. And that boosts our reply rates and also reduces just having the link in the email because the links in the email do cause you to get a spam. So
is there a specific rule about how many links or no links or location of links?
I tend to avoid links, period. But if you have a simple link in your signature like sasfuel.com, it's very simple, no tracking links, anything, that should be fine.
Okay. And so tracking is a problem then?
Yeah. So opens, I know a lot of people like track opens. Opens, I'm fine. It's not going to kill your campaign in a lot of cases, but if you're not getting responses, I would turn off opens just because the way they track the opens, they have a little HTML pixel and HTML gets picked up by spam filters. Like normal people aren't tracking opens. So they kind of figure if you're tracking opens, you're probably sending solicitation emails and tracking links are even worse. Yeah. Like definitely marketer, right? So tracking links are even worse. Like I have a client, one of our first clients we did. Basically, he wanted to track people going on his website or going through his booking link through HubSpot, right? So we had a HubSpot tracking link. And we were getting zero responses. So we took that tracking link off because it was for quick tracking or whatever. We took that off and immediately overnight, we went from like literally 0% reply rate to about 10% reply rate. So big difference, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the difference in tracking opens versus tracking links. So it's the tracking links that are problematic, and I've experienced that as well. It's really helpful, but it just kills deliverability.
Yes, and I would say like a lot of these are vanity metrics, right? Like open rates, I get maybe if you're further along the campaign, open rates are good for kind of determining, hey, what's a good first line? What's a good subject line? You can kind of get an idea there. Click tracking, I don't really see the point. I can kind of see if you're sending a video, which we can talk about like how I send videos and cold emails later. But I would say the only metric that we really track is positive reply rates and meetings booked. That's the only things you should be worried about.
Okay. I think that's really good to think about is what are the metrics that we should be paying attention to and what are the vanity metrics that just don't matter? And does it depend on where they are, like what stage of the funnel?
Yeah. Are you saying like top of funnel or... I guess like
Do you want to track different things top of funnel versus once they're deeper into a campaign?
Exactly.
So what are those things? What are the metrics that we should be paying attention to? And what are the vanity metrics that everybody says you should pay attention to that don't matter?
Yeah, I would say the only, if we're talking top of funnel, middle funnel, like we don't really work there. So we just do strictly top of funnel at Podium Hackers.
Okay.
I would say just top of funnel, basically positive reply rate, we're shooting for 10% plus, like of the total replies, 10% should be positives. Ideally, at least minimum, like 10%, we're shooting for 20, 30%. And if we're talking about meetings booked per email sent, really depends on the offer. I would say if you're like a sales, a marketing tech, you know, type of tool, I would say maybe 1 in 100 is a good number to shoot for. 1 in 100 emails being sent results in a booked meeting. Anything more technical, depending on the title you're shooting for, could be anywhere from 1 in 300, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 2,000. Really depends what you're selling. It's very offer dependent. But just launch a campaign, kind of establish a baseline, and then go from there, figure out how you can improve it.
And what are the common mistakes that companies make in cold email or starting out? Hey, I'm going to go start email marketing. I'm going to get a million leads in. And where do they fall off?
Yeah. So besides deliverability, which we kind of covered, like I would say that's the biggest thing I see. But the second biggest thing is in messaging. So I covered this in the beginning briefly, but it's basically two things. One is, let's say you're a SaaS founder and like you know who you're reaching out to. Hey, I'm reaching out to like VP of sales or VP of IT, whatever. What a lot of people would do is they'll just load up a list of VP of sales, VP of IT, and they might even go and filter like VP of sales in software companies. That's still too broad, right? Like every software company, there's so many sub-niches of software companies, and this could apply to any industry you're talking about, but there's so many sub-niches that speak their own language, have their own different pain points, that it's a mistake to just blast a message to all of them. I would say, and I have a document on this, if people want to reach out to me after, I can send this, but what I would do is I would just, if you're using a tool like Apollo, filter broadly by software as an industry, filter by the title, and go inside the keywords and search for keywords that might tailor it down. So if we're looking for software, we might type in human resources. So we're looking for human resources software, and maybe they have a specific pain point that you solve. We have a case study in with a client that's similar to them in their space, basically. So that's number one. Yeah. That's and then I guess number two, sorry, let me cut you off. I guess number two as well was basically just don't use too many buzzwords. Like I know a lot of founders are like, let's we have a cloud-based AI, ML software, whatever. Like we just want to make sure that we're conveying what we do across to them. Like just make sure you're talking about benefits instead of features. So,
yeah, that makes sense. Where you're really communicating, it kind of goes back to what you were saying before. You know, as a human, is this something a human would send?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the biggest thing I would say. So.
Yeah, and so when we're doing that, you do all cold. And so when you're doing that, do you pitch in the initial email? Are you really trying to do that, trying to book a meeting immediately? Or is it sort of a warming sequence or an offer? Or how do you approach it?
Yeah, so I have a framework and I can share this with your viewers as well. So it's usually first, so subject line doesn't really matter. I say, like, I know people talk about this. It's just make the subject line sound internal, something that they might get from their boss or colleague or whatever. Just don't lie, obviously, but make it pretty vague. First line is kind of a hook, like, hey, I saw, the most common one is like, hey, I saw you on LinkedIn. Just come up with a hook, get them to open the email, that first line. Second sentence is where I usually pitch. I'll pitch something like, hey, we can help you. I'll explain a bit as far as like how I do this, but basically we can help you achieve X by doing Y. So in the case of like one of our clients, like a lead gen software, we'll say like, hey, we can help you find heads of marketing looking for whatever pain point they solve. And you don't want to be too specific. Like you don't want to go super into details, but you want to kind of explain, hey, we can solve this problem for you. And then explain it in a way, like just keep it vague, but kind of explain it in a way that's like they've never seen before, right? Because everybody sends emails. Everybody's promising, I can make you this money. I can save you money. I can save you time. Think of sort of a unique mechanism you can put in the pitch. And then if you have a case study, I would put that in a third sentence after. Call to action. Very rarely do we start by asking to book a meeting. We'll usually send some sort of like sales collateral, like we'll send a video. Hey, can I send you a video? Can I send you a white paper? Can I send you a list of free leads or something like that? Just think of something you can send them that will get them to kind of understand your service a bit better, right? Because you're just piquing the curiosity in that second sentence. Like you can solve this problem you know they have. And this is something you have to test, but you solve this problem you know they have. You have this unique mechanism they probably never heard of. And it's very applicable for SaaS. And then you give them an outlet to basically satisfy, you know, quench that curiosity. And then you send that asset over, then you ask for the meeting asset. So.
Yeah, very good. And we'll make sure and link both of the resources in the show notes for sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's really, yeah, I'll send those after.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have framework guys, like all sorts of guys. So it should be very useful.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And so one of the things that you do is you want to make something that is unscalable and you want to take, you know, those emails that are human, they're personalized and completely unscalable, and you want to make those scalable. How does that work?
Yeah, so I gave an example, and again, this would be in a document as well, but one of our clients, they sell basically sales leads, right? Intent data, they can kind of see who's looking for what, right? So it's a pretty easy offer to sell, but I'm just going to use this to paint the picture. So sure. We ran a campaign, bit manual. We went after marketing agencies, right? We're trying to sell this data to marketing agencies. So within marketing agencies, there's SEO, there's web design. I say this as an example, right? So if we're going after web design agencies, if we send a generic message like, hey, we can help you find people looking for marketing services, they don't really care. But we'll say, hey, we can help you find CEOs, founders looking for SEO. This is our like pitch statement. We can help you find heads of marketing looking for web design. Like just kind of a slightly different pitch statement for each one. And we ran this for a bunch of different subsegments, right? Like different, maybe like fintech, SEO agencies, marketing agencies, like whatever, just all sorts of different subsegments. We kind of see this message works. And what we do is going forward, you know, we know we're going after VP sales. What I'll do is I'll pull a list of VP sales at companies 50 plus employees that are selling a B2B service. We'll pull that list, basically just maybe 50,000 VP sales. And then we just have a GPT prompt. So we'll go and scrape that company description and we'll just ask GPT to say, hey, tell me what this company does. Tell me who they sell to, and then tell me the pain point that they solve broadly, right? And then we just have it formatted into this sentence, like, hey, we can help you find heads of XYZ looking for whatever your product solves, right? So that's how we're scaling unscalable campaigns. It's just kind of see what works first. And because we have AI now, it's much easier to do this sort of scaling. Like this is what I do as far as AI. I know some people do like crazy plays. They'll say like, they'll find employees at the company. They'll, you know, do these custom personal lines or whatever, but this is how we use AI. So
I think it's a really, really good thing to do. I think a lot of times companies get that backwards. They want to go scalable first. And especially AI makes it just way too easy to do that.
Yes.
And then they're sending out these messages. They don't know if it's going to work or not. It's not really tested. It's not truly personalized. It's kind of fake personalized.
Right. Yeah.
And then it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking that around and you're doing that, the hard work first.
Mm-hmm. I think it's necessary too, because there's always tools coming out. Like when Outreach came out, everyone just started blasting, that doesn't work anymore. You know, AI came out, people started blasting, it doesn't work anymore. What's always worked is just trying to understand your customer. I think that's always going to work no matter what. Yeah. So
how do you stand out in the inbox? You said subject line doesn't matter. I'm with you there. How do you stand out? We want to keep out of spam, but then, you know, I still get 500 emails a day.
I think at this point, if we've done everything right, like everything I've mentioned that we do, just good process, understanding the customer, make it easy to read, it gets harder and harder. Actually, I'll talk about this in a second, because I think spam filters are getting harder and it's kind of filtering out people who aren't as good. So you might be seeing less emails in your spam going forward. But I would just say, honestly, send more emails. Like we just need to blast more emails. Follow up more. I can explain my follow-up strategy later, but we try to keep the follow-ups pretty brief, but just follow up more, send more emails, and that's kind of the game we have to play now, just blast more emails. So.
Yeah. So what is the follow-up strategy?
Yeah, good question. So I know it's very common, like this is common knowledge. People will say, oh, you need 7 follow-ups to get in touch with someone, right? We find that if we have 6, 7, 8 follow-ups in a single email thread, our spam complaint rate goes a lot, you know, goes up a ton. And most of the people who will book a meeting with us will book a meeting within that first 3 meetings, right? Like 90% plus of people who book a meeting are booking it within the first, the first 2, some people will book on the 3rd. So what we'll do is we kind of expect some people to not resonate. I know the subject line doesn't matter as much. It still somewhat matters. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's better to underdo the subject line than overdo it. But what we'll basically do is we'll start a new thread. So the first sort of 3 emails, we do a lot of testing on the first email, right? We'll see like 5, 10 different problem statements. We'll see what works. Okay, we find a winning variant. Then we'll go ahead on that same sequence, follow up 30 to 40 days later, repeat that exact same 3 steps with a different first line and a different subject line and see if we can kind of retarget people. So that's how we do it. I just find like we send 6 steps in a single email. People kind of catch on to that. Like I'm sure you get that. Like you get a sequence and you're just like,
oh yeah,
you guys obviously trying to sell me. So yeah. This is for people who don't see it in their inbox to begin with.
I think maybe with a follow-up sequence, we've trained people that they can ignore us for the first 3, 4, 5.
And
I'll get to that sometime. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 is good, honestly. Like most of your responses are going to come from the first 2. I would even say the first 1, vast majority comes from the first email. So
it's a good way to think about that.
Yep.
And you mentioned video. So sending video in an email, what's the right way and wrong way to do it?
Yeah, so don't send it in the actual email. I find people just don't watch it. We have a call to action, and I'm going to share this secret, I guess. It's not so secret anymore, but our most successful call to action and what we start every campaign with is, may I send a short video explaining how all this works? Because they're already kind of curious about the problem statement we laid out, like the pitch statement we laid out. So they just want to see how it works. No pitching in this email or in this video. It's just 3 or 4 minutes showing the demo. We send it if they request it, and there's like a 90% watch rate. So we do track clicks on that particular response. Like if you use Smartly, you can track the clicks on the responses. So we track the clicks there, and then basically see how many people are actually watching it. If you use Loom, you can see how long they're watching it. So if people aren't staying on very long, you need to fix the video and go from there. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then so the video comes in a second message, or you have the problem statement and then you say, hey, if you want more, can I send you a quick video?
Yeah, it's like, hey, can I send you a quick video? What we'll also do is the second follow-up, it's usually just kind of reiterating, hey, did you get this? This is what we do. The third email, what we're going to do is basically send the video as well. And we'll just say, hey, look, here's a video in case you didn't see it. Let me know if you have any thoughts. So.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's much more interactive, much more human that way.
Yeah.
Instead of just a wall of text trying to convince them that you're going to be the greatest thing ever. Because it sounds like every other email in the inbox.
Yeah, exactly. Just pique curiosity, give them a way to see it. And then that's where you can really show your differentiators, like your features, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they select themselves in or out based on that.
Yeah, and if they say yes, they're just more likely to view it anyways. So I find that's just, save everybody time.
Yeah, that makes a lot
of
sense.
If you have the time, I would say, like, if you are really going after high-value prospects, I would even take the time to film videos one by one. That's not very scalable, but if you have the time to do it, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I found that as well. We do use like stock videos, like standard videos. I say stock, videos where it's just maybe a VSL or something like that. But it's those individual videos, and I'll do 20, 30 of those in a day and just sit down and do them. And it may take an hour, but it is an hour that is absolutely well spent because the response
especially
is really good.
Especially like decent companies, I think it's worth it.
Oh, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. So how do you personalize cold emails at scale without sacrificing quality?
Yeah, it's mostly down to kind of the testing in the beginning, kind of like what we described as far as like figuring out what works and then trying to scale it. Like the example I gave of, scraping the company descriptions and then creating that personalized based off that. That's the way we generally do it. We have tried kind of cheesier personalizations like, hey, I saw you went to Harvard or whatever. Like that doesn't work as well. Like
really
false positives. Yeah, like people say, oh, thank you for looking at my profile, and then it's like, oh, we don't need this right now, so it's really no point. So
not relevant. It's like, all right, that was 30 years ago. It does not affect my daily life.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty straightforward.
So how do we personalize where it is something that's relevant? It does affect their lives and make them care. Because we do want to connect, and I think that's the important piece. If we're going to personalize, it has to connect.
Exactly. Think about the problems that you solve, right? Like that particular example I gave, like that sentence, hey, we can help you find heads of X looking for Y. That took a lot of testing. We tested so many different problem statements. Like we were testing, do they want cell phone data? Like, hey, we can help you get the cell phone numbers of heads of marketing or something like that, or heads of marketing, heads of IT or whatever. So we tested a bunch of problem statements. I would say for that given campaign, we tested maybe 10 features because we always pitch a feature and then kind of explain how it works. So we tested like 10 different features, 10 different problems, and that was the one that worked for us. So you just have to do a lot of testing. You have to do the legwork of testing the subject lines, testing the pitch statements, testing the problems, that kind of stuff. So
yeah, that makes sense. So in that case, you're not trying to connect with them personally. In that case, you're testing the problem statements and the solution or the pitch.
Yep, exactly. I'm not testing like any personalization. It's just what problem is on their mind for their job. Like they don't want to get fired either. Like they want to be able to do well in the job. So like, let's think about how we can help them achieve that. If you can talk to customers, that helps a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it's definitely counter to what we're hearing in the marketplace right now is you're supposed to personalize but I don't think that's, talking about where they went to college 20 years ago.
Yeah.
is not really personalization that matters today, but the problem that they're trying to solve right now, getting inside their head, I think that does matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll say if you have a successful campaign, then go ahead and test that like personalization, whatever, that might help. I would just say leave that until you find a winning angle with that. Like, don't test with that because it give you a lot of false positives. So
yeah, I like that. I think one of the reasons that a lot of companies are selling it just because they can deliver it and it's new and it's, you know, it's a new widget, a new toy. It's a shiny object, exactly. But, you know, does it really give results? And I like the idea of getting the messaging right at the core. And then maybe you add some of the other things on to push it, you know, get that the extra 5%. But you got to get that the 90% right first.
Exactly. What do they call it? It's like the Pareto principle. It's like 80-20 rule. Get the 80% first and then just see if you can max it out. Or we don't really bother even once we figure it out. It's just like such a small gain that we found. Like, we've tested these personal lines and it's just not a big gain. So it's like, do we want to spend extra time? Even though it's automated, do we want to spend extra time setting up automation? A lot of times it's not worth it.
Yeah, because it doesn't necessarily move the needle.
You'll have people show up to meetings. They're like, oh, I just took the meeting because I like to email. Like, that happens a lot. So it's kind of a waste of time for everyone.
Yeah, that makes sense, though, because they show up because there's some affinity to something else. But it's not that because they're interested, not because they have the problem that you want to solve, but because of some other, you know, extraneous reason.
Exactly. That's not what you want. Like, you want people that are interested in your service that actually need your service, that kind of stuff. So it's a waste of time for all parties.
Sure. So what do we do with negative responses? I know, you know, I see some of those, our team gets some, and they're like, you know, maybe we shouldn't send an email because I get this, you know, we sent out, you know, 2,000 emails and we got two back that were just hate mail. What do we do with those? How do we turn the, you know, deal with the negatives?
I would say don't even bother. Like, maybe you can call them, but don't send anything or email. They're just going to probably spam. That's been our experience. Like, we've tried to convert them in the past. Doesn't work. Sometimes you might get a hit, but it's just like the negatives outweigh the positives really heavily here.
Yeah. Is there a point where you should be more concerned about the negative responses?
Yeah. If you're not getting any positives, like it kind of goes back to the point of like looking at the KPIs, right? Like, if your positive response rate is below 10%, and basically they're just not, you know, they're just replying unsub, that's when you should be worried. I would say negative responses can actually be good in some cases. Like, if they're giving you feedback, like, hey, you know, this doesn't really apply to people in our industry, or like, this doesn't really apply to me, it might be worth reaching out and say, okay, do you mind me asking why? And then just try and get some reasons to improve your campaigns with. But generally, don't try to convert negative responses. You're just going to go to spam.
Yeah. Is there a point where you have or have seen something work that turns negative responses into positives?
Cold calling. Like, following up via cold calls. Hey, I saw you responded, not interested. Like, can I ask you why? That has worked. Just depends on your resources.
Hey, we've had some of those where, you know, somebody replies back and, you know, hey, you're a bot. And we'll actually send them a personalized video. Hey.
Yeah.
I'm a robot. it's hilarious. Because they respond back and usually it's you know, pretty light and fun.
Yeah, it really depends. I think that's another point. It's like, sometimes they think you're a bot and it's like it might actually be something they're looking for, but because your message sounds like it's written right by a robot, it's like they don't even respond. So that's kind of goes back to the point of sounding human in your initial outreach.
One of the beginning of February, Google, Yahoo started making some changes to bulk email senders. How has that affected email delivery? And you know, what should we be thinking about going forward with our emails?
I would say, so this is my understanding, Google is only applying this to @Gmail addresses, right? So for most B2B outreach, we're reaching out to company addresses is usually fine. We haven't seen a really big dip in our deliverability. I think there was a week or so when, because we have a small community, right? There's people I talk to that do the same thing as me. There's a week or so where people were freaking out, but for all intents and purposes, it's been fine. So I would say just stick to fundamentals, you know, stay out of spam, verify your leads, make sure your domains are set properly, keep sending emails, don't send too many emails, you should be fine. I wouldn't worry too much.
Now, you mentioned something earlier that I think is worth talking about again, and that is validating list. You talked about never bounce, we use zero bounce. But I think that's really, really important to think about, and not just like doing it once, but doing it regularly to make sure that your emails are delivered.
If you have a particularly big list and you're sending over like 3, 4, 5, 6 months, you can have someone build automations. I have an automation through make.com. So if the bounce rate starts spiking past like 1 or 2%, it will just kind of take that whole list back out and re-verify it. But I would say if you're sending kind of longer campaigns, I would just be kind of wary. I would make sure that, you know, I would split it up into batches, have enough emails to go through for the month, and then we verify, because people leave jobs, people's email accounts get shut down, whatever. Like, there's some DB there. So
I still get emails from employees that have been gone 3 years, and just because they're you know, old email address is still forward somewhere. Mm-hmm. I still see some of those, and know that somebody's really not doing a whole lot, but they're buying old lists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's another thing as well. It's just, I know a lot of people go through Apollo. We can also, like, I find every data provider has kind of their own pool. So it's like everybody's beating up Apollo, but it might be worth your time to go to ZoomInfo or go to some other data source. Just fresh leads, basically.
Yeah. How do you find the data sources? I mean, are there some that you see that are really, really good and others are really outdated and old, or does everybody kind of have the same data?
I would say data quality, even if you go for something like ZoomInfo, you're still going to have to go verify it. Like, you're still going to have that 20, 30, 40% that are not valid. I would say the biggest thing with data sources is a lot of them have different pools. Like Apollo has their own pool of prospects, ZoomInfo has their own pool of prospects. We use another tool called Clay. I'm sure you heard of it.
Sure.
It's go and upload like a list from Apollo. After we verify, there's that gap of like 40, 50% that are just not there anymore. You can plug in 4 or 5 different data sources like email finders and just kind of fill in the gaps there. So if I can't find it on one, it'll push to the next, go from there until find some emails. So that's how we fill in the gaps there. And I find with those emails that are verified or unverified, not as many people are hitting those. And we get some more positive responses when we do this.
And so what do you think about emails versus SDRs? Which one produces the better quality leads?
I have this debate. I actually talked to someone else about this. So I think for emails, it makes more sense if you're a bit tighter on cash, right? Like, you can hire someone like me or do it yourself, and total cost would be under a few $1,000 a month. It's not that expensive. You hire a bunch of SDRs. Obviously, the cost goes up. But the SDRs, if they're good, they are more capable of doing more targeted outreach, right? Like for us, we're focused about like volume. Frankly, like we're focused on volume. Maybe we are going after decent companies, but this volume approach is not as good, right? Like there's not as much multi-threading. There's not as much cold calling kind of following up personally. So I think the SDRs are better in that capacity. And there's the added benefit. If you have SDRs, it gives you a talent pool to promote them into account executives or whatever. So it's just pros and cons, how much cash you have, basically.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's always interesting, depending on what somebody is selling. Yeah, they'll say, well, this works or that works, or oh, email doesn't work anymore. You've got to do this. And oh, phone calls don't work anymore. You got to do this.
Yeah.
I think it all works.
Exactly. You're just not doing it right.
You just have to do it right.
Yeah, that's the thing. So it all works. It gets harder. Things change, but it's always going to work. Like cold calling still works. Like my friend runs a cold calling agency and they're doing perfectly fine. So
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the future of email is? What do you think the future of reaching out? What is going to work in 2024, 2025?
It's just going to be fundamentals, right? Like obviously technicals are changing. I would just go on LinkedIn, pay attention, kind of see what people are saying. A lot of people posting about deliverability, best practices for whether it's cold calls, LinkedIn, people are always talking about best practices, right? So just keep an eye out for that. Things start breaking, kind of talk to people like that, right? Basically just see what they're posting. But there's no real trick, I think, that's going to move the needle. It's always going to be fundamentals, like not sounding like a robot, reaching out to people who have the problem you solve, and making sure you're speaking to the right problems.
Yeah. But what's best email advice? So if somebody is going to start a campaign, what is your best advice or maybe an out-of-the-box approach?
Yeah. I say, I always tell people this when I get on calls with people, is stop worrying about scalability. Like, most people who are listening to this, but a lot of people who are looking for cold email help, there's a very high chance they're not getting any meetings, right? Like you're not getting any meetings, you're getting very few meetings. So stop worrying about scalability, dial it back, and even sit down, write one-to-one emails if you need to. Dial it back and just figure out what will make someone click, then figure out how to scale it up. Like don't worry so much about, oh, this isn't scalable or oh, we can't scale this approach or whatever. If you have to sit down, like we already talked about this, but if you have to sit down and film a video one by one for each prospect, then do that. Figure out the commonalities between the videos later, but just sit down and film it. Just do the work.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no shortcuts.
Yeah, no shortcuts. Well, I think that's what everybody's looking for is the shortcut, the magic bullet.
No,
what is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say for us, like we're able to do it so much faster now because we've done this so many times. We have a process laid out, but that process is basically why I explained this call today. There's nothing special. Like, there's no secret I'm hiding from anyone. So
yeah. So what is a good test size when you're testing messages?
Yes.
How do you know what's a false signal? How do you know what's a good signal? Right. What do you know is not enough volume to give you any meaningful feedback?
Yeah, great question. So I know I mentioned like in a given sample size, we want to test at least three variants, maybe 3 to 10 variants or whatever, right? I would say if you don't have that many people to email, probably 3 is the better number. But a good rule of thumb that we use is 3 variants, or each variant should have at least 300 emails sent to that variant. I would say ideally 500. And if you're not getting any positive replies out of those 300, if you're not getting any meetings, it's probably time to cut that back and look at what you're doing wrong.
Oh, that's great. Where can people learn more about you and about Cold Email Hackers online?
Yeah, sure. I'll put my LinkedIn. I can just send you a LinkedIn post, right? Or my LinkedIn profile. Okay, so I'll send the LinkedIn profile.
Put that in the show notes.
Perfect. And I'll send the guides as well. So you can find my guides. I'll send my guides over. I'll send my LinkedIn profile. And you can go to my website, coldemailhackers.com, if you would like to kind of talk about a longer-term engagement. But if you just want to ask questions, my inbox is open. You can just message me anytime. I'm happy to answer.
Nice. So cold email inbox? So you get those emails?
Yes. All the time. I actually appreciate it. Like my accountant, my CPA, he cold emailed me and I just took a meeting. He's actually been very great. So I do actually
respond to
emails. Yeah.
There are actually really, really good things that come in. I've bought a number of things that way. Cold email works. It absolutely does. When it's done well, when it's done right.
Yes.
And when the follow-up is done well.
Yeah. And I would say it works, but you also have to understand like you're reaching out to them. So it's like, the sales process is probably longer, not as easy as like inbound or whatever, but it does work. You just need to take the time and do the work of actually making it work for you. So
it's great, great advice. Justin, thanks for being on SaaS Fuel.
Likewise.
Thanks again, Justin, for coming on the show and sharing your insights and strategies. Great stuff today. You can learn more about Justin and Cold Email Hackers at coldemailhackers.com. As always, all links, resources, highlights, full show notes, and a few goodies from today's episode are available at sassfuel.com. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well. Full episodes, shorts, outtakes, training, lots of stuff over there for you. Be great if you would share this episode with someone who needs an empowerment boost today. Let's lift each other up one podcast at a time. Everyone who shares this week, we're talking about email, so everyone who shares gets an inbox illuminator. It's a device that makes your emails glow in recipients' inboxes, drawing their eyes like moths to a flame and boosting those open rates and, of course, conversion rates as well. The inbox illuminator. So share the episode. Join us next Tuesday, where our founder is Jason Friedman. He is the CEO of CX Formula. We'll be talking about growing, scaling a business with stability, purpose, and energy. And the best part, you're going to love this, is the kinetic customer formula. It's so good. And then next week on our SaaS Fuel Expert Series, we have Arthur Petropoulos, founder of Hillview Partners. Great insights on how to make your company attractive for investment or exit, plus a handful of common mistakes that founders make that sometimes cost them a small fortune, sometimes a big fortune. But I will see you next time. And as always, enjoy the journey.
Thanks for listening to SaaS Fuel. Full show notes for each episode, which includes a summary, key takeaways, quotes, and any resources mentioned, are available at sassfuel.com. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the content and getting value from these episodes, please leave us a rating and review at ratethispodcast.com/SaaSFuel. We'll be sure to read these out on future episodes.